The Paranormal Project Radio Show. Scott Allen and Christina Bowen.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Paranormal Project Radio Show. This is our special in-between Christmas and New Year's show. It's actually pre-recorded, but we're glad to be here tonight with a very special guest. Hi, Christina. How are you doing?
Doing great. Going a little crazy with the holidays, but who isn't?
Yeah, I know. I get it. But it's almost over. Then we'll be in the dead of winter and praying for Memorial Day, which is what I starting January 1st. So our guest today, I don't want to waste any time, is author, explorer, podcaster, storyteller, adventurer, Jeff Belanger. And, you know, he was on our show, I don't know, last year or the year before now, and he has a new book out, The Fright Before Christmas. So I thought, what better time of year to bring him on to talk about his new book. He's also the host of the New England Legends series on Prime and PBS, and he also has the podcast New England Legends as well. So we're going to bring him out. Jeff Belanger, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hello, good to be back with both of you.
I am so glad to have you with us today. How long have you been working on this book, and how did this come out?
Yeah, so it's funny. It started really about 10 years ago when it was an early and cold December day, and I was hanging lights outside for the holidays. Half of them didn't work. They worked when I put them in the box 11 months ago. They are not working now. And then I was putting a Christmas wreath on my front door. The wreath was plastic, fake. Everything about it was fake, except the pine cones, but those were still sprayed with plastic. And the crafting wire I used to attach it to the door knocker was old and rusted. And it broke and fell to the ground. And I was just like, humbug. I didn't say humbug. It was like a string of swears that like some were new, hadn't been invented yet. And, you know, others were old classics. You know, I dusted off the hits, played them all. As I stood there with my fingers like numb, I was just like, why am I doing this? I'm a Halloween guy. Why am I out here in the cold? Putting lights up. Why the lights? Why the evergreens? Why December 25th? Why Santa Claus? Why do we go into hawk for this one day of the year? Why so much trouble? Why? Yep. And I'm the kind of person that once those questions start knocking around in my head, I don't really sleep well until I start to find those answers. And then there was a Christmas lyric jumped into my head in that moment. Andy Williams singing, "There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases That's long, long true. Ago. And I went, all right, what was Andy Williams talking about? Because when I grew up, I had Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Right.
And not much else. And so what does he mean, scary ghost stories? I'm a Halloween person. Why should I just skip this holiday? But then I started diving in and I said, all right, I'm going to have to break this thing apart into all its original pieces and put it back together again so I could understand it. And I started to dive in and I went, oh, dear Lord. I was always a Halloween person because I like spooky things. I like spooky, creepy things. And I would learn through this journey that, oh, my, have I been loving the wrong holiday all these years?
Yeah,
because Halloween is the second spookiest holiday of the year. It is a distant second. And it can't hold a candle to Christmas when it comes to fright factor. And so it sort of started there. And then I was asked to give a talk on Krampus, the Christmas devil. And I went, well, I've been meaning to look into the old guy a little more anyway. Mm-hmm. And one thing just sort of led to another. And so this was all born as like a stage show where I was telling the story of Christmas and the monsters and the darkness around it. And then a couple of years ago, a publisher contacted me and said, this should be a book. And I said, yeah, I've been meaning to get to that. And then, but I don't want it to just be like another book. And they're like, no. We want this to be like full color, hardcover, beautiful, gift book. And I just went,
presentation that's quality.
Really
yeah.
twisted and sick. I'm in. Let's
right up your alley, right?
Yeah. That's kind of my wheelhouse. So let's do this. And so it was like 10 years in the making, and many of the stories were crowdsourced. I would tell the stories in front of live audiences, and someone would come up and go, I can't believe you left off whatever. And I'd write it down and I'd go home and I'd go, God, that's good. I can't believe it. And then, you know, the next audience would get that one, and it just grew and grew. But it turns out, and then also too, I started to get mad. I was raised Roman Catholic, which I feel like I should divulge here in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And when I was growing up, you know, Christmas was a very big deal in my house.
Right.
And my priest, though, Father Lawler, kind of a mean guy, if we're being honest. I remember him hating Santa Claus and thinking, what? Like, I was five or six years old, and Santa was coming to our church hall. And all the kids there were beyond excited because, I don't know, the world's biggest celebrity is coming.
Yeah, yeah.
So all of a sudden, in walks Santa freaking Claus, and he's got a big sack, and he's got candy canes for all the kids and little wrapped gifts, which turn out to be plastic rosary beads for all the kids. And
what I've always wanted.
Wall, you know, just like leering at Santa Claus, trying to shoot death lasers out of his eyes, trying to like kill Santa with his brain. And I remember looking at Father Lawler and being like, what's wrong with you? That's Santa Claus. This guy's literally like bigger than Jesus. That's why. Oh, so anyway, I think he was sort of telling me in his own angry, bitter way that this holiday has nothing in the world to do with Jesus. And boy, was he right. He was right.
Really,
this thing is as mm-hmm. pagan as the day is long. Forgive me.
Yep.
It's as pagan as the day is short.
That's true. Good point.
So, yeah. So it turns out all this fuss is over one thing, and that's the winter solstice. It is the shortest day and the longest, darkest night. Winter is coming. It's a time to be afraid. It's a time to ask yourself if you have enough food and fuel to get through the winter. Mm-hmm. It's a time to put your bygones aside and party with your neighbors, because we're going to need each other to get through this brutal season. And if we've been having arguments all year, it's time for me to give you gifts and for us to drink and eat together and say I'm sorry, because if anything goes wrong, I might be knocking at your door and asking to stay with you, and you might be doing the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it.
So that was the impetus. And then there's so many pieces. And I've learned that this holiday was originally the most inclusive of all holidays. Had nothing to do with what you believed or didn't believe, or who'd you prayed to or didn't pray to. Made no difference. If you live in a place where winter's not so easy, that was it. This holiday was for you. The solstice, whether you want to call it Saturnalia or Yule or midwinter or Christmas, it was always about getting ready to hunker down, because the long winter's coming.
Right. So the fright before Christmas, Krampus, where did he fit in?
So if you are trying to explain to your loved ones, especially your children, about why it's so important that we stay inside. Now, us adults know, if you wander outside in the cold and the dark and you're caught unprepared, you will die. You'll die from the elements. You'll go hypothermic. You'll fall down dead. And that's the end of it. So whether the elements kill your child or a monster kills your child is kind of irrelevant. If you teach them, this is the time to stay inside. This is the time to stay safe among your people, because out there's literally monsters lurking. Maybe some of these monsters are here to help in a weird, twisted, sideways, around the back kind of way. And so Krampus was born in Austria, in Germany, and in the mountainous region. He's many centuries old. And he eventually got connected with St. Nicholas. And St. Nicholas was a real historical figure, born in Myra, modern-day Turkey. He was born into a wealthy family. He was an orphan from a young age, and he spent his whole life giving his money away, building orphanages and hospitals and giving dowries to the poor and throwing coins through windows. Gave it all away because that's what made him feel good. And he became the patron saint for a lot of groups, pawnbrokers for one, sailors for another, and children as well. And when he died on December 6th, which is an important day, December 6th became St. Nicholas Day. That's the day that St. Mm-hmm. Nicholas brings presents to the good girls and boys around Europe. And if St. Nicholas and Santa Claus are one and the same in your head, anyone listening right now, I'm going to ask you to go ahead and split them apart, at least for the next hour or so, like the rest of the world does. St. Nicholas arrives on December 6th. Santa Claus comes on December 25th.
Right.
Certainly plenty of similarities and crossover. However, mm-hmm. they are different. So if December 6th is St. Nicholas Day, December 5th becomes the day for consequence and judgment. And that's where Krampus fits in. He comes on down. He arrives often with St. Nicholas. He's a monster covered in fur. He's got long horns and a long forked red tongue. He's covered in chains, so you can hear him coming. And he carries a scratchy sack. And on December 5th, the evening, Krampus knocked. He'll come around and scoop up all the naughty children, stuff them in the sack, bring them back to his lair, and kill them. So come December 6th, St. Nicholas Day, St. Nicholas can bring presents to all the good girls and boys, because that's all that's left alive.
Oh, that's a pleasant thought.
Isn't that so?
I mean, it is.
Wouldn't it be great?
Such a joyous time of year.
One day, if we could get rid of all the jerks in the world. Like,
oh my gosh.
It's
my Wait, now we're not doing a show on The Purge.
Let's face it. I think that would be pretty wonderful. So that was where it all sort of started.
Wow.
And people have called incorrectly Krampus rather the anti Saint Nicholas or the enemy of Saint Nicholas. Not true at all. These guys
just did the work.
They would arrive together, cohorts, good cop, bad cop, like that easy, right? And nor is Krampus evil. You know, every society needs someone that doles out the punishment, someone that you know, handles that. And that was Krampus. That doesn't mean you can't love your job. You know what I mean?
You are a little twisted, aren't you?
But that doesn't make you evil, you know?
No.
You should enjoy your work.
Well, you know, killing the little children, I don't know. I mean, that's a little rough. I mean,
on the surface, sure.
Yeah.
But over time, he became very metaphorical, you know, and then he also carries a switch of sticks, as you can see behind me. And then he was known to just beat the naughty children as opposed to kill them, just sort of like correcting them. But he was always sort of the consequence for bad behavior. When I was a kid, I was warned I'll get less presents, or at the very worst, I'll have coal and sticks in my stocking, which is
that's what I was told.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could behave badly for a whole year and coal and sticks. So what?
Not so bad.
You know what I mean?
Not so bad.
Yeah, all the cookies I stole, all the nights I stayed up late, small price to pay.
There you go.
But that's not really much of a consequence. Krampus, and there are many other monsters as well, brings that consequence. And of course, today, he's blowing up. He's getting movie deals, you know? He's in 2015, the Krampus movie came out. It was sort of a cult classic. It's getting played year after year
now. I love it. It's actually in my Christmas playlist.
Yeah. You watch It's a Wonderful Life and then Krampus back to back. I want to see a crossover, you know, or Jimmy Stewart's like, oh, hey, Krampus, what's going on? You know, like, every time
that
a bell rings, Krampus is coming and you little crap kid, run.
I'd pay to see that on the big screen. Yeah.
I know some CGI folks. We're going to have to start a GoFundMe, I guess.
But, that's it.
But we could get this done.
That would be awesome.
Wouldn't it?
It would be.
Oh my gosh.
Did you grow up with scary, gross stories or monsters in your
Christmas? Not at Christmas time. Although, you know, I did go to Catholic school, so there was Sister Frances. She carried sticks.
Yeah.
And kind of was the consequence, but.
So you grew up with was that Our Lady of Inadvertent Flatulence? Is that
Yes. That's the one.
They were rough. They were rough there. They've churned out many a psychic medium, I assure you.
Yes.
they literally beat the psychic right into you.
Oh my God. I'm
I don't
you.
See any dead people. Wham, wham, wham. Oh God, I do now.
I do now. It's a miracle. Yeah.
Brought me right to the edge. Now it's open.
I didn't know I was going to laugh so much. This is great.
So the holiday and many, especially Northern European countries, incorporate these various monsters. They're out there lurking in the dangerous, long, dark, cold night. And then parents discovered that they could use them to keep their kids in line. And so anyone who's ever been a parent and been trying desperately to get just a little bit of quiet time at night before you yourself have to go to bed, know at times you get desperate. And imagine instead of being told, you know, Santa's watching, or, you know, you're going to get less presents. Imagine just Krampus standing in the corner, just hitting the sticks against
his hand.
He's
going to come beat the crap out of you. Yeah.
Just sitting quietly, you know, like you're watching TV.
I would behave.
Yeah. And your parents are like, hey, did you take an extra cookie? Krampus. And he just kind of leans forward. Oh, not yet, buddy. Just wait. Oh, he's ready. You know,
he's ready.
Just hitting the sticks like, yep.
Watching everybody.
I'm ready. Just say the word and I'm on the job.
You know, Santa is time out, and Krampus is the time you're out, because that's he's knocking you out.
Yeah. I guess we're talking about like misdemeanors and felonies, right?
That's it.
There you go.
Yeah.
That Krampus would be that's a good analogy.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And he was wildly popular. I mean, there was postcards, lots of postcards. If you want to spend a fun few minutes, go on Google image search and just type in Krampus postcards. You'll see
the old vintage ones.
Yeah.
I love those.
Yeah. That's what you gave instead of Christmas cards. You'd send those. And they were wildly popular, and Krampus was everywhere. But around the 19-teens, 1920s, he very quickly went out of fashion when Santa Claus took over the Christmas holiday. There's a direct one-to-one correlation there. You know, once it became about Santa, then all the monsters had to go away. But Krampus is just one of many through the various folklore of.
It wasn't the current Santa that everybody sees and things. Wasn't that linked to a Coca-Cola advertisement early back then?
His outfit sure is. Yeah. When someone says Santa Claus and you picture in your mind what he looks like, Coca-Cola taught us that in the 1920s. And what was happening was that America was in a Great Depression. And the only way out of a Great Depression, economic depression, or recession for that matter, is to spend money. And if you don't have money, how do you do that? And if you do have a little bit of money, your instinct is to save it and not spend it.
Right.
But Coca-Cola came up with this, Santa had been evolving since really like the 1850s or so. He showed up in Harper's Magazine, Thomas Nast, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas was written by Clement Moore. Yes. That really started to make the figure bigger and bigger. But it was the 1920s when Coca-Cola developed this ad campaign. And the thing is, it worked. People bought Coke. And then the following year, people that sold anything, donuts and pizza, Santa, cars and whatever, they were like, wait, Coca-Cola does not own Santa Claus. We could use him too. And so the world's biggest celebrity was out there promoting for free products and services everywhere. And America started to crawl out of the Great Depression. Thanksgiving was moved to the fourth Thursday in November instead of the last Thursday, because retailers needed more time for shopping for Christmas. And what's good for the economy is good for the America.
I knew that.
And
I
then
know that.
Christmas squarely became about consumerism at that point. Yeah. That's what it was all about. It was about making sure we spend, and all the monsters, all the consequences had to go away. That's what was so important, was to, you know, make sure that nobody's scared. We want everybody happy. Bye. And that's where it sat. But I'm here today to warn you that these monsters are coming back, and they're coming back because they're showing up at pop culture references. They're getting movie deals. They're in parades again. We are bringing back the darker side of this holiday. And I think just in time to save ourselves.
So is your balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The good guy, the bad guy. I love that. I'm all about balance in this world anyhow.
I agree. Well, also too, think about this. In my experience anyway, I don't know of anybody that can't make changes for the better without fear. Unless you are afraid of something, how can you, like, if you know, like, it's a good idea to eat more vegetables and take walks and exercise regularly, you know that. That's just, everyone knows that. But, you know, it's tough to put it into practice until your doctor says, you just had a minor cardiac event. The next one could kill you. If you do A, B, C, and D, you might keep this away and be okay. And then you say, oh my, I'm not ready to die. You're scared. Right. You make changes. Yep. This holiday offers us this inherent darkness, this inherent danger. And if we face the gauntlet of these ghosts, of these monsters, then we might come out the other side better for it. And everything can change in one night. And I know a guy who did change in one night, thanks to some ghosts haunting him.
I've heard of him.
Yeah.
I believe it was.
Four.
Four? Okay.
Four ghosts. The first, of course, was Jacob Marley, the one everyone forgets.
Yes, Jacob, and that's, yeah.
That's the, and he's most important. He's the one mm-hmm. that shows up and says to his old business partner, Scrooge, you know, I'm covered in chains, chains I forged in life. They were just as long as yours, seven Christmases ago this very night, and you've mm-hmm. worked on yours ever since. It's a ponderous chain, but there's a chance for you, Scrooge. You are going to have to face down three more spirits. And if you mm-hmm. get through this, and Jacob Marley arranged it, he made it happen. If you get through this, you might make it. And Scrooge, of course, has to face his past, the ghost of Christmas past, see his lonely self at the boarding house, mm-hmm. sees his sister yeah. die in childbirth, sees himself falling in love and then getting his job with old Fezziwig, but then also sees himself falling in love with something else, with money, and then losing yes. the love of his life. And you see him turn into this hardened man. The ghost of Christmas mm-hmm. present shows him a world where Christmas cheer is everywhere, even in the poorhouses and workhouses, even at Bob Cratchit's house where Tiny Tim is so sick. And if only they had more money, they could afford medical help and nourishment. And Scrooge is in a position to do something about that, but chooses not to. And then finally, the ghost of Christmas yet to come shows him a bleak future where some old guy dies and people are laughing about it. Good to be rid of him. And finally, when we see the grave, we realize it's Scrooge.
It's him.
And it's at that point in the story where all of us who are reading the book or watching it on TV or play or however you're consuming it, we're shocked because we go, oh no, oh no, oh no. I realize who Scrooge is. I had no idea. He's me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm yeah. Scrooge. I'm getting older and crankier. And then in the next morning, of course, he wakes up to the bells of churches ringing and everything is different. He has faced his ghosts, faced his demons. He's run that gauntlet. He came out the other side and he can change everything in one instant. He can start giving to charity. He sends a turkey to Bob Cratchit. He goes to see his nephews for dinner. Everything is different in one single night. And that idea of redemption mm-hmm. overnight sounds so, so very good. And it's there for us because of the inherent danger, ghosts and monsters that are lurking in the shadows of the winter solstice.
I love very the way you cool. put that. Very so cool. eloquent.
It's been there for us, right? It's mm-hmm. mean, the Christmas Carol's been around since the early 1840s.
Right.
That story's never gone away. You know, it shows yeah. up year after year. It's we've seen Muppets do it. We've seen it on stage. We've seen it in cartoons. You know, we've
on ice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeff, everywhere. Have you seen yeah. it at North Shore Music Theater? Have you seen their
no,
version?
I have not.
So they've been doing it for decades. And the man that plays Scrooge is from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had him on the show last year for this very spot to talk about his role as Scrooge and because I thought, you know, what's more paranormal than A Christmas Carol, really, you know?
Yeah.
Four ghosts. And it was a great, it's great how it's all kind of like tied in together like that.
It's such an important story, and that you can't say enough what Charles Dickens did to define the holiday. The holiday was not a thing. It was not it was like Groundhog Day. Like the way you think of Groundhog Day
mm-hmm.
now
mm-hmm.
is how people thought of Christmas then. Just a day. Most people went to work and school and everything else, and Parliament was in session and all that other stuff. But this book suddenly said, like, no, this is a day, this is special, and it's a time to give to charity, and it's a secular book too. I mean, the birth of mm-hmm. Jesus is mentioned barely. It gets one sentence in the whole book, but it's really about how you're supposed to feel about it. And what he's doing is he's tapping into centuries of Saturnalia and Yule and these festivals that have been omnipresent, you know, and so many things we do today still connect us to those very old ways. When you put up a Christmas tree, when you put a wreath on your front door, when you put up lights on your trees outside, when you baked goods, when you make eggnog and get drunk with friends, when you go to your office party and get loaded, you know, you are participating in Saturnalia. You're participating in Yule, right? It shines through, but we fooled ourselves into thinking like, oh, this is how we celebrate Christmas. And it is, but it was not really
only
about,
because the church took right. what was already happening though
exactly
and rolled it into their own version.
And that's super modern. I mean, Christians have been at war with Christmas since about 336 AD until like 1970. You know, they literally banned it when the Puritans were in charge of British Parliament. They banned Christmas. They called it satanical to dress fine, give gifts, make merry. You'd be fined 5 shillings, really? Which is about 3 days' wages for the working class back then. And even when the ban was lifted, preachers were preaching from the pulpit, "We do more to dishonor Christianity in the 12 days of Christmas than in all 12 months combined." And they were they were furious with the holiday because it was so pagan. And then finally, somewhere along the way, they just sort of gave up and said, "It was ours all along. Jesus is the reason for the season." And all we know is that if it were important, if the birth story of Jesus was important, it would get a lot more ink in the Bible. It gets hardly a mention. And if the date was important, that would be told to you in the Bible. It's not. It's just all we know is that shepherds were sleeping out in the field at night, keeping watch over their flock. And in Bethlehem, they did that in the spring, summer, and fall. They did not do
it in the winter,
which means that, you know, we can rule out December, but you know, here nor there.
Right. We know they just picked a day.
No, they didn't pick a day.
It was a pagan day, but I mean, it wasn't the actual day.
No, right. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Right. So
wasn't the actual celebration. It was the celebration of the birth, but it wasn't the anniversary of the birth.
Right. Correct. Yes. And so that happened with the Emperor Constantine in Rome. He was the first Christian emperor. He's trying to unify Rome. Jesus was born a commoner. That's a very important part of the Christian story. Mm-hmm. And Christianity, of course, hinges on Easter, not on Christmas. What defines you as a Christian is that you believe in Easter. Everyone is born. All of us are born. But death and resurrection, that's not something everybody does. And so that's what defines Christianity. Easter is the very biggest holiday in Christianity from a theological perspective. It's just nobody got the memo. Right?
Exactly.
So the Emperor Constantine was trying to sell Jesus to the Romans. He was trying to unify under one religion. Didn't ban the others. Knew he couldn't ban Saturnalia, which was December 17th to the 23rd. But he knew if Jesus is going to be a king, not just a king, but a king of kings, he needs a birthday. And he knows the perfect birthday is December 25th, because in the Julian calendar, the 25th was the winter solstice. And that was the festival of Sol Invictus, the sun god. It's the shortest day, but it also marks the day where the sun starts to return. And there's hope.
The coming of the light.
Mm-hmm. So it's coming back, and it will build and build all the way until the summer solstice, when you get the longest day and the shortest night. And so that was it. He thought that was a perfect day to celebrate Jesus. You have this raging party, the 17th to the 23rd, one day for the hangover on the 24th, 25th, we party again. And Christians were at war with that date right up until very modern times. And here we are.
And here we are. So your book, is it all of that, or is it really, it doesn't focus on Krampus?
No,
I mean, it's not just Krampus.
Krampus has one chapter. Let's face it. He's sexy. He's got the movie deals. He dines in the restaurants we can't get into, you know.
He's on all the best list.
He sells. But I cover the whole history of Christmas, how we got here, how we got to December 25th, the history of St. Nicholas, the history of Santa Claus, and then the many other monsters that lurk, not just Krampus, but, you know, Iceland has got stuff that's even worse.
Really?
Iceland brings us the Grilla. And Krampus.
Is that the horse?
No, that's the Marilod from Wales. That's the dead horse that rises from the grave to try to get into your house for treats and alcohol. Which is awesome too. So the Grilla is she's an ogre who lives up in the mountains, and she's got 13 tails, and she comes down around the winter solstice. And unlike Krampus, like if you're a good person, you don't have to worry about Krampus. Not your concern. Grilla, on the other hand, does not discriminate. Good kids, bad kids, makes no difference. If you're lost and wandering out in the woods, she will scoop you up, bring you back to her lair, cut you up, cook you in a stew, and eat you. Parents are happy to tell this story in Iceland. So when Iceland was first settled, only about 1,100 years ago, there were no people there when the Europeans first arrived. It was covered by ice, you know, much before that. But there were trolls and monsters and imps and fairies and all kinds of magical creatures. And as they started to settle into, as the people started to settle into villages and towns, those creatures got pushed up into the mountains. But on the solstice, they come down to collect what's owed to them, their rent, if you will. And so the Grilla is the queen, the matriarch of the whole dysfunctional family. And also, you have to understand, too, in Reykjavik, the capital, right now, around the solstice, there's about 4 hours of sunlight. That's it. That the sun rises and sets in like 4 hours. If you go further north, it's less. And if you get to the very northern tip of Iceland, you're almost at the Arctic Circle where there is no sunrise. It is total darkness. This is the time we stay inside. We stay safe. We keep our children inside because there are monsters lurking out there and it's dangerous. So so the Grilla, she also has, she's in charge of the Yule Lads, who are these 13 trolls that come down one by one throughout the month of December and stay at your home for 2 weeks and mess with you. Like one will steal your cow's milk. One will, lick your spoons clean after dinner. Another peeps through your window. Another steals your meat. Another steals your candles. Another steals your yogurt. And they just all come, you know, all throughout the month. And it's a wild time. And Iceland, I mean, even on the news each night, they'll say like, tonight is the sheep coat clod who will come and poke your sheep. So watch out for that.
Yeah.
And he stays for 2 weeks. So this lore and legend ties us back to really ancient ways and reminds us that, you know, there's other stuff out there. And Iceland's amazing. Iceland, they'll reroute highways because they believe that's like a troll rock. You know, you can't blast that rock. We're going to go around it.
I've heard that.
So that's amazing. You know, like that's, they take it seriously. And so the Grilla has become also part of their own pop culture. If you land at the Reykjavik airport right now, there will be a giant cauldron with a big ogre witch like stirring in it. And you can get in the cauldron and get your picture taken with the Grilla. Like we do Mall Santa. They've got that. Which is awesome.
That's right up my alley.
I know, right? I know. And there's so many like of these various monsters all across various cultures. Every country almost has their own version of something. And it's I think it's a wonderful way to connect to the darker side, the balance, as you were saying, Christine.
The balance.
Yeah. Like you just can't. Did you ever eat like some cake that was just too damn sweet?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's, and then you got to go have chips to balance it out.
That's what we did to Christmas. We made the cake too sweet. You know,
it I would agree.
Something else, and we're collectively working on that right this very minute. You know, that it's changing, and I think changing for the better. This stuff speaks to something very ancient and primal in all of us.
Something I think a lot of people, and especially in today's society, that we have forgotten.
Yeah,
this, you know, we've forgotten where we come from. And we've made up all these fancy stories to explain things. And then we have these big parties. And they said, everybody's forgetting where the roots of it, where it started.
Yeah. And it's always been there. It always had a way to shine through, even when you, no matter what label you slapped on it, whether you're hanging mistletoe or eating a Yule log, speaking of cakes that are too sweet, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That used to be a tree that you burned, you know, it was there's so many things that sort of made their way through, and which I think is amazing. What a testament to these old ways that they make it through all the way to present day, even if people don't understand why they're doing it or where it came from. And I think that's really sort of wonderful. So now, you know, last year I started a new tradition where I make my own wreath. I actually go out in the woods and I pull evergreen branches and I twist them into a wreath and all this other stuff. And it came out horrible. I mean, it's a mess. But I will say this. It worked. Those prickly needles kept the bad cheer outside and the good cheer inside. It meant something.
As a green witch, this warms my heart. That's what I do. I've got oranges drying right now to hang. So you
do it instead of just putting a fake plastic wreath on my door, because my dad did it and my dad's dad did it and my neighbors do it and it looks nice and all that other stuff. It has meaning. I'm putting it up with intent to keep the bad stuff outside and keep the good stuff inside. This tree is more powerful than winter. Our ancestors didn't pick it arbitrarily. I mean, they would look out at the landscape and see that winter killed everything. It killed the flowers and the grass and the trees. They're just skeletons. Kills the ponds and the lakes. It's frozen solid. Yeah. But then you go, wait a minute. What's that tree that winter can't kill it? It must be magical. It must be powerful. There must be something about it. And so we take those branches and we put them over our doors and windows, and we put them, you know, in wreaths over our doors to keep the bad spirits out. Spirits we can clearly hear, by the way, because in the wintertime, you hear this shrieking, howling sound that you don't hear in the spring, summer, or fall. And you could say, well, it's just the wind whipping through the trees. Or you could say, those are the cries of the vanquished foe of the Norse god Odin as he rides through the sky on his wild hunt. And if I don't protect myself, they'll get in. And if they get in, then things aren't going to go well for me. And we still do that, which I think is so cool.
Yeah, well, what about the trees, like the Christmas trees?
Yeah, so the Christmas tree. Well, again, this is the one tree more powerful than winter. Like, you don't need to be a botanist or otherwise to figure that out. Just look outside, see what's still alive. And so so our ancestors knew it too. It provides you shelter if you're stuck outside. You know, it's some shade, some protection from the wind and everything else. This tree is absolutely, something about it is powerful. And not only that, when our ancestors would make a kill in the winter, they would pull the entrails of the animal out and drape it around the evergreens. Two reasons. One is to make an offering to the tree. The other is that other animals could pick that clean and they too could survive the winter. Yeah. And I want everybody to really let that sink in and think about it. If you're ever stringing popcorn and cranberries to put as garland around your Christmas tree.
That's just a completely different visual.
Yeah. I say, let's have a more traditional Christmas this year. Get yourself some entrails, put them around the tree. I know the smell is going to be awful. It'll be terrible. But
cinnamon and orange will cover it. Yeah.
You'll need a few oranges. But when people walk in and go, oh my God, what is that? You could say that is the smell of an authentic and traditional Christmas. Thank you very much.
You can start out with some sausage links. It might be easier than go and have to kill something.
Sure, you know? Sure. Yeah, but that's it. I mean, think about how intestine-like cranberries and popcorn look. That's what you're doing. You're literally recreating the entrails around a tree.
Fascinating.
Beautiful. Really, just
it's a lovely thought. Yeah.
I know, right? You thought you were just going to get like a monster story and you finally understand.
It's just so wrong.
You have to have a lot of guts to come in and tell a story like that. I tell
you.
But I'm bumping. He's always good for a dad joke. Always.
So many great traditions are born from this this holiday. And I growing up too, I remember I had Jewish friends and I was like, this sucks. You know, if Santa doesn't visit you, like, what's up with that? Is he anti-Semite? You know, and then I realized, I was like, but he could. You know, Santa does not have to be exclusively Christian at all. And you could put up a tree and you could put up lights. Those are not Christian symbols whatsoever.
Right.
You know,
right.
And you not doing that is your own choice. Obviously, no one has to. But don't tell yourself you're not doing it because, that's what Christians do. I mean, yes, it is what they do, but it's not their symbol either. And so I think if you like the lights, if you think they're pretty, put them up. You know,
put them up.
Yeah. And we do it, by the way, because we literally want to be a beacon during this long, dark, dangerous night and winter that we want to find our way back home in the dark. We want our neighbors and friends to be able to find us if they need us. That's why we light up light. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why we do it. It's not just to run up the electric bills and, you know, or to outdo our neighbors, but it's something that always had meaning. We need to be beacons in this long, dark night.
I love that. See, this is just all right up my alley. I'm a blend of all the different traditions.
Yeah.
So, because I have a Christmas tree, but I also celebrate Yule.
Sure.
And, you know, I blend it all together.
Right. Well, that's redundant. Like the Christmas tree and celebrating Yule goes hand in hand. It's saying I'm a Christian with a Christmas tree. That's blending traditions, right? I celebrate the birth of Jesus and I put entrails on my Christmas tree. That's blending traditions. You're being consistent.
Yeah, I think I'm going to pass on the entrails this year. Maybe another time.
Yeah. You do you. You know, all good.
It's all good. Yeah.
I'm going to stick to the cinnamon sticks and oranges. Yeah.
Well, no, totally fine and understandable. Probably smells better.
Yeah.
The other thing too, though, I remember thinking about how I didn't grow up with Krampus and being disappointed only now in hindsight. And I've had a good talk with my parents about it. We've worked it out. You know, I said, why didn't I have Krampus? And they're like, we didn't know. But then I thought about it and I said, you know what? Krampus was in my childhood. He was in yours too, by the way. I need you to think back. He was there. He was green and he lived on Mount Crumpet.
Yes.
He was there. Just didn't quite look the same as you know him now. He was there.
He was just neon green. Yeah.
He was green. He didn't have horns, but his hair could like curl into like
curled
horns.
In. Yeah.
Lived on Mount Crumpet.
Krampus, there's a lot of similarities there that I never made that connection.
Yeah. So anyway, am I here tonight to accuse Dr. Seuss of plagiarism? Yes. Yes, I am.
Good luck
Jacques
with that.
Used Dr. Seuss. The Grinch worked because he probably was something a little bit familiar. There was something about him where you're like, I like this Grinch. I don't know why, but
He wasn't out killing the kids, but you know.
Yeah. There's a
story, but
there's an old adage, right? That talent borrows, but genius steals.
Oh. I hadn't heard that one.
No.
Dr. Seuss was a genius.
Well, he was.
Yeah, for he sure. Was, for no, sure. I know. I get it. And I get that, like, the idea of all this can be really uncomfortable for some people because it's just the antithesis of everything they thought how things are supposed to work. But if you read the old Grimm fairy tales, the originals,
they're
dark.
Scary shit.
They
really are.
Yeah, of course they are.
The originals, but they've Disney-fied everything. And
yep.
Because they used to teach you a lesson, and now they don't.
Well, the lesson's learned when it's extreme. And so, for example, Cinderella, right? In the original Grimm tales, when the wicked stepsisters were trying on the glass slipper, one of them cut their toes off to try to wedge it into the glass slipper, and they filled the glass slipper with blood. Couldn't get her foot in. The other one cut her heel off, also filling it with blood again. You'd think someone would watch that and go, you know what? No.
Didn't work.
This isn't your shoe, clearly.
I
right?
think it flipped by Walt Disney. I don't
that
know.
Somehow got didn't make it to the final yeah. edit of the cartoon Disney version. But the Grimm tales were meant to be tough because, number one, we know as adults there's monsters in the world.
Yeah,
there's
we do.
No question. You know, you have the news. In Bulgaria, they have the Karakonkalis, who comes out during the 12 days of Christmas, the days they call the unbaptized days, the unholy days. And they come. The Karakonkalis is a subterranean Bigfoot with glowing red eyes and claws. And he's covered in fur. And he comes out at sundown. And he's going to try to jump on your back and claw at you until dawn before he has to go underground again. But he's a shapeshifter. He can look like anyone and anything. And he's also sort of keeping tabs on you. And so I love that story because that is the most authentic monster, I think, in the world. Because we know when we watch the news that there are monsters, as we just said. They do horrible things. They kill people, hurt people, shoot people, you know, in groups. And the thing is, if they had like glowing red eyes and were 8 feet tall and covered in fur and had razor claws, we would just know to run. That's easy. You see that
they blend
coming at
right
you,
in.
Like, fast. Yeah. In. Real monsters look just like us. And that is the
most truth in that
frightening thing of all. And so, yeah, let me tell you about the Karakonkalis. Maybe that's just a regular old person, or maybe it's a monster in disguise. And we have to really be careful when we're out there or among strangers or even people we thought we knew, because you never know. And so all of these stories, all these legends, all these monsters have a moral to them that that we, you know, we teach our children and we tell each other, because we need to keep the bad cheer away. We need to be safe. We need to be careful, and we need to be positive and look out for each other, because winter is coming. And it's coming again next year, you know,
and it's not just a thing from a series on HBO.
No, it's a real dark
thing. Yeah.
It's not just Game of Thrones, right? Winter is coming very, very soon. And so once it's here, you know, that we got to figure it out. We got to get through this.
Sorry, Jeff.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, did these stories change in places where they didn't have the cold and the darkness of winter the way that we do here?
They did not catch on like they do in southern parts, because, you know, so many of those stories also made their way through England. And England, as you probably know, colonized the world, right? Mm-hmm. At one point, the sun never set on the British Empire.
Right.
Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Singapore, you know, I mean, the Brits spread far and wide and took their stories with them. But, you know, when it's Christmas Day and you're at the beach sipping a Mai Tai in the Caribbean, it's a little bit. So I've always said, like, how do you see the light when you're on a beach on a bright sunny day with like the surf tickling your toes? You don't see the light. The light is everywhere. Yeah. Things are fine. You know,
right.
You see the light when you get into a very dark place. That's when you can see the light. So these monsters did not travel well to southern climates. They stay north to where winter was really a force to be reckoned with, and still is, you know, even though today we've got DoorDash and, you know, heat that we can just turn up, like hit it a few degrees if we can afford that. You know,
well, there's those of us that still have their childhood collection of coal. I'm still working on it. So
nice. From just being naughty all those years.
Yeah.
Ironic, which means being naughty paid off.
There you go.
Right. Like, ooh, I'm keeping warm. This is great. Oh, it's so warm. Oh, that's nice. Thank goodness I was such a brat. I could keep warm for years on this. Thanks, Mom and Dad, or whoever brought me that coal. Yeah. Yeah. I get
it. Lesson.
Yeah. So yeah, there was a time when coal and sticks was like, oh, thank God, we're freezing.
Right?
You know?
We're going to toast this. Up. Yeah.
We're going to toast right up. I love that.
Oh, gosh.
So anyway, I was trying to save Christmas, even if it was just for me. You know, I was trying to like say like, because when I was young, Christmas was a drug. You know, I was high on that drug from the time the dessert fork hit the plate on Thanksgiving until the ball dropped on New Year's Eve. And as I got older, a lot of that magic went away until it was really not even there at all anymore. Then I had a kid and a lot of that magic came back, which was awesome. Great. But now she's 16 and she's
losing kinda, magic.
She's over it, you know, and but I still find it, you know, I found it again because of what it means. And even though she's sort of over it, I'm still trying to be like, hey, I don't care whether you love it or hate it. There's still magic to be found and had in this holiday. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to work on that, even if it's just for me. And at the end of the
that's a beautiful thing.
It takes your whole life to sort of realize, like, I can't control you, even though you're my kid. Like I have to do this for me, and maybe it'll just sort of radiate outwards. I don't know. But at the very least, I want to be happy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's so funny we're having this conversation, because Christina and I have been having a conversation over the last several weeks about, you can't see the light without the darkness. The darkness makes the light shine brighter.
So bring on the monsters.
Bring on the monsters.
Bring them all on. Get scared, get frightened, cower in the corner, just like they did in the Krampus movie. Right? Yeah.
Everybody huddled together but you got to look back, and once again, this is the family united around a common enemy, and it brought them together. So are monsters really a bad thing?
I don't think they are. I mean, there must be, that's why we keep them. And the Krampus movie, say what you will about it on its artistic merit, but like, they nailed the spirit. Krampus is here for us. Krampus was waiting in the shadows. He wasn't angry. He was just waiting for us to call him. That was it. He was just like, he was just filing his fingernails going, I'm here when you need me. Just let me know. And he got the movie deal, and now he's in. Yeah. My parents live in this little town in Connecticut, and they have a Christmas parade, which looks like any small town Christmas parade you can imagine. The fire trucks, the marching band from high school, kids marching, Santa. But they also had a Krampus last year,
Really?
I love it.
Wandering through their parade, and people are going, who's that? And why is that here? But if you know, you know. And of course,
it started conversations. Yeah, and that's a good thing.
Absolutely. What's Krampus? Why is Krampus here? And I mean, mm-hmm. That parade, forget it. He's probably right behind you. Like, he's right behind me.
That's fascinating. Totally right.
No. So he's coming back. I got to attend a few years ago. The New England Krampus Society has an annual ball. And of course, COVID derailed that for a few years, but it's happening again. And I went last year. It was at the Narragansett Brewery in Providence, Rhode Island. And it was all these Krampuses walking around and beer. So, I mean, it was perfect. But I know, right? It was great. So there's people that are celebrating Krampus and everything that Krampus represents. And I think that I welcome it. I totally welcome it because we need to be having these conversations and realizing there's stuff that's much older. That's we've seen little peaks of it here and there, but I think it's coming in, it's having a renaissance right now.
So we only have a couple of minutes left, believe it or not. We've gone through almost all of our time. So Jeff, your book, where's the best place to get it?
It's gone. Amazon sold out weeks ago.
Wow, good for you.
Books a Million just sold out online. Bookshop.org sold out. There's a few stores out there that still have it. There's an audiobook version that I narrate, and that you can get. That won't run out. You can get that. And the electronic ebook or Kindle or whatever, that won't run out
that
either.
That makes sense.
But the first
printing, I love it when the author does their own.
So the first printing, first edition is just about pretty much gone. If you find one, hold on to it. Because I'm sure next year we'll see another printing of it, but this first one went faster than any of us could have ever guessed. And the publisher printed a lot.
Now, is that something you're going to print mostly at the holidays, or do you think you'll get it all year round? Do you think? I mean, if people want to get it.
The publisher, they've already ordered some but they don't expect them until March. No one thinks this. No one expects this book to sell much in the spring or the summer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's just people that are just that forward thinking, you know. Yeah. But in the fall, you know, there'll be another reprint, and it'll be out again next year. And that's the beautiful thing about A Christmas Story is it can come out year after year. So the response to this book was nothing I'd ever seen. They just sold out so fast.
And that's great though.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens next year. But I really believe in the story, and I think it sold out so fast because it must've resonated with others too. And now we're looking for that.
Everybody's still looking for balance. I believe that.
Yeah. So I'm doing my part to summon these monsters from the dark recesses of the holiday and say, come on back. We need you. We need you so badly to balance this thing out and help figure it out again and be a little more inclusive than we used to be.
That's great. And anything else coming up? I know you still have your show, New England Legends. You've got that. You've got the podcast, and you're still on Prime.
We're still working on new podcast episodes every week, and that's still going. I'm still working on Ghost Adventures. We're about to start filming our next season next week or 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Very soon. The next season starts filming again, and still always working on new projects and pitching ideas. You never know when one catches on, and then working on that.
Jeff, thank you so much for being here. It's been a real pleasure having you back, hearing all about Christmas. I want to wish everyone a very happy new year. We'll see you in 2024. Christina, Jeff, thank you so much. Have a wonderful night, everybody. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Paranormal Project Radio Show with Scott Allen and Christina Bowen. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. While you're there, leave us a rating and review. We'll be back next week with more exciting guests. Now go out there and explore the paranormal.